The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Therefore, be it resolved that all members of this House of Assembly wish Shirley the best of luck in her driving adventures and commend her on her sense of humor, which, as she stated, she needed to have to participate in the worst driver's contest. And, Mr. Speaker, I would request waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? All those in favor say aye. All those against say nay. Motion is carried. All right, let's notices of motion, orders of the day, oral question put by members to ministers. The time now is 12:20, and we will finish at 1:20. The honourable member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, my question today is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, we've been asking the government all session to update their economic targets. They said that they've been coming soon. Now we find out that they're going to wait until after the last question period of the session before they release this information. The financial sector consensus suggests that we will see downgraded expectations for Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, why is the Premier trying to hide bad news from the people of Nova Scotia?
Honourable the Premier.
The quarterly update is being presented in line with where it has been presented in past years. In fact, earlier than on many occasions. Instead of waiting the next week, decided that we would release it as soon as it is ready.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on her first supplementary.
Thank you so much, Mr. Speaker. And to the Premier, given that the financial update is available and the House is sitting, we would have expected it to come here today so that it could be discussed here today. Mr. Speaker, it's the function of the legislature to scrutinize the executive, and it is the job of opposition to hold the cabinet to account. By waiting until after the final question period of the session, the Premier is avoiding being held accountable for this fiscal update. Mr. Speaker, let's not mince words. The fiscal update is important to Nova Scotians. It actually holds the financial position of the province and shows us the taxation and spending projections for the government. My question, Mr. Speaker, is why does the Premier think that this NDP government should not be held accountable for their fiscal update here in the House?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, of course, we agree with the elements of accountability, and in fact, we are producing the report when it became available, when the numbers were actually finalized, and as you know, those things happen right up until the last minute so that we can give the most up-to-date information to the opposition. I assume that they will attend the Minister of Finance's update. I assume that they will speak to the press about it and give their impressions, and the people of Nova Scotia will judge whether or not their criticism and or praise, because perhaps they'll be happy with it, is appropriately justified.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this is not the first time that the NDP government has withheld information from this House. They suppressed the socioeconomic study on gambling. They continue to refuse to release the $80,000 study on the global paper industry. This controls its message by milking maximum coverage for stories every day that they wish to highlight by making multiple announcements packaged for the media while they avoid the legislature for stories that they want to hide. Mr. Speaker, this is wrong. The Minister of Finance should have tabled his fiscal update with the Speaker of the House of Assembly so that it could be scrutinized on behalf of Nova Scotians here in the legislature so we can do our job. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier direct his Minister of Finance to table immediately and without delay his fiscal update to the legislature?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As you know, since this government has been in place, we have been using more setting days of the House of Assembly than has been the norm for the House of Assembly. In fact, we have some of the longest sessions in order to allow the accountability measures that the member opposite talks about. Mr. Speaker, but I can tell you this, we are presenting the financial information that is required through the quarterly update. That will be done at 2 o'clock this afternoon, and I extend an invitation to the member to attend.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, the people of Queen's County deserve a government that works in their interests, free of politics. All they ask, it's not funny, Mr. Speaker, all they ask is that the government be focused on preserving jobs and serving the community, gets the guarantees it deserves, and ensuring that they and other taxpayers are protected. Now is not the time to engage in blatant, disgraceful political games, but that is what the NDP seem determined to do just when we should be focused on the people of the South Shore. Today, Mr. Speaker, we learn that the government is clearly politicizing this serious and sensitive situation, contrary to the interests of the people of Queen's County, contrary to the interests of getting to the right answers in a very difficult situation, by sending out a blatantly political partisan postcard. And I will table that postcard for the Premier and for the benefit of this House. And I will ask, Mr. Speaker, I will ask the Premier, as leader of the NDP and the Premier of Nova Scotia, did he authorize this blatant political postcard to the people of Queen's County?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to differ. I see nothing blatantly political about having members of the legislature who stand up for the people of the South Shore, as those members should have done, but didn't.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, what the Premier is missing is it is not supposed to be about him and his party, or us and our party, or them and their party. It is supposed to be about jobs in Queens. It's supposed to be about families and their fears and their anxieties that he and his party have chosen to exploit in such a disrespectful, blatant, partisan manner. And Mr. Speaker, if they don't want to take my word for it, they can listen to their friend Parker Dunham, who today said that what they are doing is just plain wrong. And so I will ask the Premier, since he clearly does know about this political postcard, will he do the right thing and apologize to the people of Queen's County for playing politics with their fears and anxieties?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, this is the same leader that when he's here in the House, he says that this is a political bailout. He says it's unfortunate for the government to do this, Mr. Speaker. These are the things he says when he's here, but when he's down the South Shore, he says, oh, I'm going to vote for the bill. Mr. Speaker, if that isn't politicizing the issue, then I don't know what is.
Yeah. The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, clearly the Premier is more than aware of the contents of this postcard because he's just quoting from it about a part of it I had not yet raised in this House.
Yes,
but the fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, that the Premier is right. The postcard contains a premeditated, despicable, knowing lie, a knowing lie that he and his party are sending the people of Queens County. And the fact of the matter is, on this side of the House, and I have answered right here, we have said in Halifax, in Queens, in this chamber, outside that chamber, that we're voting for the bill and that we're supporting the deal. But the Premier...
Order, please. Order. Order, please. When you withdraw the remark that you just made, I'm going to ask you right now to do it. I just didn't have time and all the bickering going back and forth here today. So now I'm going to ask you to withdraw that remark. It's unparliamentary, please.
Mr. Speaker, I withdraw the remark I made about
the... Despicable is unparliamentary.
Okay, well, I withdraw the word despicable. Thank you for pointing that out, Mr. Speaker.
Continue on with your question.
My point, Mr. Speaker, is it's not supposed to be about the NDP or the Liberals or the PCs. This is extremely disrespectful of the people of Queens who have gone through an awful lot to get to this point. And you know what, Mr. Speaker? The people of all Nova Scotia deserve a Premier that's above this kind of political sleaze. And so I'm going to ask him to apologize to the people of Queens and to all Nova Scotians for acting in such a disrespectful manner.
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, here's what should be apologized for, and I'll just read back to the leader what he said. The Nova Scotia opposition leader is calling the government's deal to keep Liverpool paper mill open an expensive bet. Progressive Conservative leader Jamie Bailey says the money used to bail out the Bowater Mersey paper mill could have been better spent, Mr. Speaker. That is disrespectful of the people of the South Shore. I'll table that.
Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Mr. Speaker, the Labour Management Review Committee was a creation born out of Bill 100. Businesses and employers were concerned with the makeup of this committee and its complete lack of representation of non-unionized employers and employees. The first item the Labour Management Review Committee was tasked to look at was first contract arbitration, something that would only affect non-unionized workforces, the very stakeholders who are not represented on this committee. The committee didn't even reach a consensus on FCA, Mr. Speaker. Non-unionized workplaces are left wondering if the outcome would have been different had they been represented on this important group. My question for the Premier is, now that we have seen that the Labour Management Review Committee is in fact advising the Minister on labour issues affecting non-unionized workplaces, will he ensure that non-unionized employers and employees are represented at this table?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As you know, and I think every member of this House knows, including the member opposite, that is a mischaracterization of the legislation, who it affects, Mr. Speaker. The reality is you have to be in a unionized workplace before the legislation applies. And that is why you have unionized representatives on the LMRC, along with companies who have unionized workplaces.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
This coming from a Premier that has consistently misrepresented the concerns of the business community, consistently misrepresented the concerns of Michelin, and consistently misrepresented the opinions of every single employer in this province, Mr. Speaker. We're not going to take any lectures from the Premier on misrepresenting the facts. Mr. Premier, on November 18th, the leader of the official opposition tabled Bill 105 to amend the Trade Union Act, calling for representation of non-unionized employers and employees on the Labour Management Review Committee. If this committee is going to be making recommendations to the Minister on Labour issues that affect non-unionized workplaces, these workplaces deserve a representation on this advisory committee. The government didn't call Bill 105 for second reading during the session. Mr. Speaker, will the Premier tell members of this House when, or if ever, his government's going to call Bill 105 for second reading?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question would be, why didn't they call it in the opposition day?
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his final supplementary.
This government knows that the agenda of this House is in their hands, Mr. Speaker. Nobody else's. Nobody else's. This Premier has consistently misrepresented the concerns of businesses and left them out of important advisory roles like the Labor Management Review Committee. He made that organization. He's responsible for what happens with it. When is he going to take responsibility for the decisions he makes, Mr. Speaker? Business and employers need to have their representation on the Labor Management Review Committee. It was clear when people raised concerns about first contract arbitration that this government and this premier wasn't willing to listen. It is just unjust for this committee with no union, with no non-unionized representation to make decisions that affect the fate of business in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, why won't the government put partisan ideology aside and allow for fairer representation on the Labor Management Review Committee?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, if there was ever a misrepresentation of the manner in which this House works, you just heard it, Mr. Speaker. The member knows. The member knows that they have control over Opposition Day. They can call any piece of legislation they want to, and they chose not to call it, Mr. Speaker. Furthermore, Mr. Speaker, the LMRC has a fair representation of the interests that are affected by the committee. So this government deals with things in a practical and pragmatic way, not hostage to special interest groups.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister. My question is for the Minister of Health and Wellness. You know, Mr. Speaker, we've seen a series of these tiny little announcements involving facilities in Capital District, and tomorrow will be no exception, I suspect. And they're often announcements about studies or future plans, some point off in the future. You know, and tomorrow the minister, we understand, will be at the Dartmouth General to make another government announcement. We don't know what about. Well, I wouldn't clap yet. I wouldn't clap yet. You know, Mr. Speaker, when you talk to people at the hospital, workers at the hospital, you talk to people involved in it, talk to people in the health department, it's probably one of two scenarios. You know, either the minister is going to move ahead with what we've been asking for 2.5 years now, and incidentally what the premier asked for when he was in opposition before that, but stopped asking for it 2.5 years ago, which is to address the chronic overcrowding that has only got worse since the NDP took government, and address the fifth floor. Or, as most in the hospital community suspect, they'll announce some movement of health care delivery to be transferred from the VG over to the Dartmouth General. Now, Mr. Speaker, will the minister's announcement tomorrow provide immediate relief for the overcrowding in the emergency room and the underutilized operating room space at the Dartmouth General, or will staff and patients at the facility continue to struggle and suffer with daily overcrowding?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. Mr. Speaker, what this government is doing is we're doing our due diligence as we plan for the future of our really important healthcare facilities, our tertiary care facilities, our regional hospitals, our important facilities like the Dartmouth General. This was something that the former government did not do, which is evidenced by the situation that developed at the Colchester Hospital. And perhaps the member from Dartmouth East would like to talk to the former Minister of Health about why that wasn't done in that case, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Isn't it interesting that the minister talks about planning for the future, and yet for 2.5 years has done zero there, and really has done worse than the previous government, which I think is pretty hard to do. You know, yesterday, I don't mind waiting. Don't matter to me.
I don't mind it either.
Yesterday the minister was concerned, and I heard somebody yell it a couple minutes ago that I might get apoplectic about her announcement tomorrow. Well, you know, I'm going to table that definition because, of course, she knows that that's relating to her causing a stroke. And I'm certainly hope that if I do get apoplectic, that her announcement is about solving the problems at the emergency room, because otherwise I might be transferred to Hants like patients the other week when I have that stroke tomorrow. You know, Mr. Speaker, for 2.5 years, and again this morning, frankly, or this afternoon, the minister's response to overcrowding at the Dartmouth General has been to ignore it and tell us how she's improving things at other facilities. And over those 2.5 years, the overcrowding has got worse under this NDP government, not better, hasn't even stayed stable. So, Mr. Speaker, will the minister confirm whether the Dartmouth General's fate lies in another 5-year planning and execution process, or will the needs of patients and staff who face overcrowding in the ER every day now be addressed immediately by tomorrow's announcement?
Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to tell members of the House that indeed tomorrow we will be having an announcement with respect to further investment in the Dartmouth General Hospital. And as I said to the members of the media yesterday, when they were very persistent doing their job, trying to get a jump on what that announcement might be, that they will have to wait until tomorrow, Mr. Speaker, for the details. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm sure the Minister can understand why the media and people in the community are concerned, because in one of her answers just a few moments ago, she talked about planning exercises again. Well, you know, long-range planning is really important, but 173 code censuses last year at the Dartmouth General means there is an immediate problem that has gotten considerably worse since the NDP took over government. Worse, not better, which means there is the need for an immediate solution at that hospital. You know, Mr. Speaker, the minister has to know that patients are shuffled, surgical procedures are cancelled, not just there but elsewhere because of overcrowding. You know, the fact is, the minister sought fit to announce changes at Cobequid, which are effective on January 1st, and that a number of times since then, she has oddly talked about changes when asked those changes when she talks about the Dartmouth General, and yet things get worse. So, Mr. Speaker, I'm going to ask again. I understand that she's not going to answer the exact details. Well, Mr. Speaker,
please ask it. It's been 6 minutes now. Please ask. I timed the questions. Next.
The question is, will tomorrow's announcement...
Next, the Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party. The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, there are currently 1,700 seniors on long-term care waiting lists. That is up 200 since 2009. A review of that list shows that one-third of those seniors are currently in a hospital bed waiting for more permanent advanced care.
Okay. Are you floating the chair? Are you floating the chair? I'll ask the honourable member. Would you like to stand up in your place? Okay, after a question period. Because if you keep it up, you're going for the remainder of the day. The honourable leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Of the 1,700 seniors that are on a waiting list for more advanced long-term care, one-third of them are currently in a hospital bed. A review of the list will show another third are currently living in a community where home care support does not exist or is insufficient to meet their needs. Yet $0 have been allocated in the recent capital plan to provide more permanent services and housing for them. My question to the Premier is this. There are 1,700 reasons to help those seniors who need more advanced permanent care. Why is he ignoring them?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, far from ignoring them, Mr. Speaker, what we are doing is working very hard to try to meet their needs. We have either built or are in the process of building almost 1,000 new long-term care beds to try and meet the need. We do know, of course, that we have an aging population, and we can expect this problem to continue to grow in terms of the number of people who will require service. One of the things that the member opposite could do is he could speak to his colleagues in the federal government and ensure that in the next round of health transfers, there is sufficient money in the health care budgets to actually be able to meet the needs in the provinces.
Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Well, Mr. Speaker, apparently it's somebody else's fault. Mr. Speaker, seniors have been waiting too long for the care that they need. According to the Premier's own Department of Health and Wellness, they're going to have to just go on waiting, contrary to the answer he just gave. The Department of Health wants to review the issue of long-term care facilities prior to tendering for any new long-term care beds, and I will tender that document from the department. I will table it, Mr. Speaker, for the benefit of the House. The problem with this approach is that the Department of Health has given itself 3 years to complete their review before they intend to tender for any more long-term care facilities. So my question to the Premier is, how long will seniors have to wait? How long is that wait list going to be? And how many more dollars are going to be wasted due to his inaction?
Here. Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I guess it's just a matter that the member didn't hear what I said. I said we have built or are building. So, in fact, building is actually taking place of beds that will be used for that that very purpose. In addition, there are many other initiatives that are taking place in the department to try to address the issues that that seniors are facing today, and they have to do with the whole continuum of care from home care right through to long-term care. There's not going to be a single answer to the question of how we provide services to our seniors. It is going to be a broad spectrum of choices that will fit the circumstances of the individual seniors. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, just so we all have our facts straight, the Premier is referring to 1,000 beds that were announced 4 years ago and have been tendered and under construction since that time. The fact of the matter is those 1,000 were part of 1,300 that were announced then, 200 of which his government has cancelled since they got into office. Clearly, that action is not going to help the 1,700 seniors currently waiting for more advanced permanent care. We're listening to the answers, Mr. Speaker, that the Premier is giving, but obviously his own finance minister isn't. He is going to update the province on our financial position today, looking for ways to save money. Clearly, getting that one-third of seniors in an expensive hospital bed into more appropriate and more cost-effective care is one way to both increase services to seniors and save money. So my question to the Premier, finally, is why is he ignoring such an obvious opportunity to get this right, provide better care, and save money?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we're not ignoring it, and we also know, as has been raised in this House before, that there are many, many days in which there are beds and various facilities that are actually empty, and that has to do with the fact that the manner in which the single entry access program was put in place by the previous government is not efficient, is not working the way it should, and that's why the Minister and the Department are working with the various providers across the province to try and sort through that so we can have a more efficient service and a more efficient usage of the beds that we already have. In addition to that, of course, we are continuing to build beds, as I have said.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In previous question periods on November 8th and November 9th, I asked the Minister of Education about student-teacher ratios and how they're calculated. On November 8th, the Minister said, and I quote, "That's calculated by how much money is provided to school boards." We know, Mr. Speaker, that ratio has nothing to do with money provided to school boards. So on the next day, November 9th, the Minister responded that student-teacher ratio is, quote, "based on the number of students that we have for projected enrollment." In reality, Mr. Speaker, it's not based on projected enrollment. It's based on actuals. Actual enrollments are determined by the number of students in our schools on September 30th. To her credit, the minister tabled a page that contained three numbers, but the ratio that was tabled was still calculated on projected student enrollment and total number of teachers. So, and in response to her question on November, to the question on November 8th, the minister said, and I quote, "As soon as I have all of the data in a spreadsheet, definitely I will be tabling it." So my question to the minister is, has she tabled the spreadsheet containing the requested information, and if so, when?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for that question. And I do not have a spreadsheet. There is one school board that I don't have in that data in a spread form. What I do have is a number of papers that outline where all of the population of our students are across the province, but it's quite cumbersome to read through. So as soon as I have that in a spreadsheet that's in a readable that we can utilize appropriately, I definitely will make sure that the honourable member has a copy. Thank you.
The honourable member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Nova Scotia Teachers Union members include, but are not limited to, school principals, vice principals, superintendents, consultants, speech-language pathologists, resource teachers, math mentors, literacy mentors, learning support staff, counselors, and so on. These are the positions that provide support in various ways in our schools, but they do not interact on a daily basis, face-to-face, with a class of students. And these numbers are significant, Mr. Speaker, and it's misleading to include them in the calculation of student-teacher ratio. So my question to the minister is this: how many Nova Scotia Teachers Union members in total in our school system provide these out-of-class supports and therefore would not be included in the calculation?
Honourable the Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I would like to remind the member opposite that the ratios have been brought forward that way for many years, and especially when she was Minister of Education. The ratios are always based on the number of students, based on all of the staff. We are looking at class sizes. I can speak to that. The ratio is 12.9:1, but class sizes in the province of Nova Scotia in elementary schools and junior highs and high school are at average 21 average class sizes in the province of Nova Scotia and 20 at the junior high level. I do have information that I will table here around how many teachers that we have. We have 300 more teachers in the system than we had 10 years ago when we had 30,000 less students. Our ratios are low. Sorry, I said that wrong. We had 30,000 more students 10 years ago. We have 300 more teachers now, even though we've lost those students out of our system. But I will like to note that I do have information on class sizes for junior high and elementary school that I would like to table. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At public accounts on November 30th, the Deputy Minister responded to questions about student-teacher ratio and the real numbers of teachers in the classroom. The Deputy said, and I will quote, "What people are most interested in are those who interact on a daily basis, face-to-face with a child, as compared to those who don't." And, Mr. Speaker, the Minister knows full well the numbers that we're looking for are the numbers of teachers in classrooms and the actual numbers of students. So, Mr. Speaker, the Deputy gets it. During the same discussion at public accounts, the member from Hants West asked the Deputy, and I will quote, "What is the actual number? Do we know that?" And the Deputy's response was, quote, "We do." So my question to the Minister, if the schools have the numbers, the department has the numbers, the deputy has the numbers, why would the minister not have them and be prepared to table them here?
Honourable the Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I just will repeat that it's a class size that people in the province want to know about. And we have the lowest class sizes, average class sizes, in decades in this province. The lowest class sizes in decades. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, one of the highlights of this time of the year for many Nova Scotians is gathering with family and experiencing the holidays through the eyes of children. Unfortunately, a group of Nova Scotia grandparents will not experience that joy this year. Because of family breakup, some of these Nova Scotians will have no right to see their grandchildren during the holidays or at any time of the year. Mr. Speaker, last June 8th, the Minister of Justice met with the Grandparents' Rights Group and indicated that he was considering legislative amendments which more clearly recognise grandparents for access to their grandchildren. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister of Justice, why hasn't his government introduced the legislative amendments that gave the seniors the Minister met with such hope in the spring?
The Honourable Member, the Honourable Minister for Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know the Minister of Justice really wants to ensure that all Nova Scotians enjoy the holiday season, and that's why the Minister met with that concerned group, Mr. Speaker, something I believe the former government just chose not to do.
The Honourable Minister, the Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Mr. Speaker, last April, during debate on a progressive conservative bill concerning grandparents' rights, the Minister of Justice told members about how his life is enriched by the special relationships he has with his granddaughter. As the debate went on, the Minister said, and I quote, "We have the responsibility to ensure that any legislation or legislative change strikes the right balance between the best interest of the child and the wishes of the extended family." And, Mr. Speaker, I'll table that quote. Mr. Speaker, this was something we all agree with. So my question through you to the Acting Minister, the Minister understands the importance of the relationship between grandparents and grandchildren. He rightly believes legislation has to strike a delicate balance. With all that correct information, why is the government so reluctant to take the next step and introduce legislation that strikes the balance and encourages healthy relationships between grandparents and grandchildren?
The Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe the Minister of Justice made a commitment to that interest group, and I believe that the Minister of Justice will do his due diligence with his department to ensure that we do have a balance when it comes to this issue, Mr. Speaker. And I think it's ironic that the member opposite asked that question. He was part of a government for 10 years who chose not to bring legislation forward, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Justice, the Department of Justice, is going to look at this issue and make sure that we bring a balanced approach to this issue.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, first of all, this is not a special interest group.
That's right.
This is a group of concerned grandparents.
Exactly.
Mr. Speaker, later today, this government will issue a press release that will boast about the number of bills this government introduced and passed during the fall sitting. That number will be cold comfort, Mr. Speaker, to the members of the Grandparents' Rights Group, who had hoped that the minister meant what he said when he told them in June that this government would consider providing relief from emotional pain, financial expense, and legal expenses they have experienced while fighting for some access to the grandchildren they love. My question through you to the acting minister, will his government make the holidays a little brighter for members of the Grandparents' Rights Group and commit to introducing legislation in the spring to help them spend time with their grandchildren?
Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I did not call them a special interest group. They're an interest group and a very important part of our communities here in Nova Scotia. I know firsthand, Mr. Speaker, I've talked to many of them in the Grandparents' Rights Group. Some of them live in my community. We've spoken over the last number of years. I think the Minister of Justice was genuine with his meeting with those individuals, and I believe he is going to take the appropriate steps to ensure that all Nova Scotians have the rights that they deserve under the law, and it's unfortunate that we have to actually discuss this issue, but the Minister of Justice will live up to his commitment, and I believe he'll bring forward a balanced approach to address this issue in the near future.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The construction of a new high school is always a major event in the life of a community. The building that results is one that the community is going to live with for 40 to 50 years, so it's important the school is well built and fills the needs of the community. In Bedford Birch Cove, a sod turning for the new Bedford High School took place recently, and I commend the government for living up to the commitment made by the previous government to build that school, because that hasn't happened in all situations. Mr. Speaker, taxpayers in Bedford will be paying extra to make sure the new community center attached to the high school. They're also underwriting upgrades to the cafetorium, which will double as a performance space. I've heard from parents who are concerned the technology and materials used in the upgrades will be selected by people who have no experience in the arts or in creating performance spaces. They want to make certain the fixtures will enhance the performances of students and not hamper them. Can the Minister of Education assure those parents that furnishing decisions will be made for the right reasons and not just because they're cheap?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'm looking forward to have the opportunity of the member opposite meet with the department and with our the people in charge of that project. And I, at that time, she will receive an overview of what is going on in terms of construction. I will say that at this point, as all capital projects, it's in the hands of transportation, but is overviewed with members in the Department of Ed, and I look forward to her being able to, the Honourable Member opposite, having that meeting with the people in the department. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Grove on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I would like to thank the Minister for the letter I just received. I sent it to her 3 weeks ago and just got an answer asking for those briefings, so I do appreciate that. Mr. Speaker, parents have also expressed concerns to me about the Learning Centre. They want to make certain the layout and design and the products used will be appropriate to its use. I've already heard about one design error that was caught before construction proceeded, toilets that were not accessible being used in the design for the Learning Center for students with disabilities. Mr. Speaker, can the Minister of Education, whose department would be responsible for the furnishings, assure parents who are, after all, taxpayers, that a supervisor with expertise in accessibility issues and the design of learning centers is going over this design with a fine-tooth comb to make sure we won't have to fix mistakes like this later on?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I just want to say that it's very important that when we're building our new facilities, that they do meet the needs of all of our students, especially our students with mobility issues. And also, we want to make sure that the materials that we use in our school are not only the very best materials, but are safe materials, yes, too. So all of those considerations are going to be taken, are being considered as we move forward. And I have to say that I do agree with the member opposite. We want to do it right the first time, so that we don't have to go back and correct mistakes. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. The Waycogama Provincial Park has recently benefited from federal economic stimulus investment and accompanying provincial investment. Over $550,000 has been spent to improve this asset for the enjoyment of visitors and the people of the Waycogama area. My question for the Minister, why has the Minister's Department issued orders to stop mowing grass?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
You ran out of questions.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's the last question period, near the end of the last question period, so we're getting some interesting questions here today. But we take our maintenance of our provincial parks very seriously, including in the members' ridings, and we're looking at different maintenance system on mowing grass. It's certainly a more au naturel approach to our provincial parks, and this is one of them, and a nature-based system of maintenance within our provincial parks.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary. On his first.
Mr. Speaker, I realize the time of year, it may sound funny, this question, but I'm actually referring to a new policy called Growing, Not Mowing. Now, Mr. Speaker, I drove through the park in Waycogama myself this past summer and was surprised to see a once beautiful park with views of Waycogama Bay now full of weeds and encroaching bush. People in Waycogama, including the Waycogama Development Commission, are confused. They are also becoming embarrassed because an asset that they have always been proud of has visitors questioning why the park is starting to look abandoned. Growing, not mowing, is a provincial policy. Has the minister been asked questions in his own constituency or perhaps from other members of this legislature who may have similar concerns to the people in Waycogama?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, we've had some concerns from other areas of Nova Scotia, and, you know, at first I agree it looks a little bit untidy, but, you know, the eventual aim is to put it back into its natural growth, you know, with softwood or hardwood or whatever species are growing there. And there's still a mowed area, but there's just less of it. And, you know, the it's just to try to make our parks more appealing and more nature-based and, you know, more just the natural look to it, really.
Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I want to be supportive of staff who maintain our parks, and I want our parks to benefit from innovation like the yurts that are now offered in Waycogama. My final question to the minister, will the minister conduct a review of this new policy when parks open next spring and gain input from park visitors and local users to make a decision which has their support?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly always our policies are under review, and input from the public is welcome, including from the Honourable Member. And I would suggest perhaps if the Honourable Member wants more details, more information, to contact our Director of Parks, Mr. Harold Carroll, and he can fill you in on exactly how the policy works.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, seniors groups in Richmond County are expressing alarm at the decision by the Geiser-Wainaganish Strait Health Authority to cut the foot clinic that was held at the Dr. Kingston Medical Clinic in Lardoise. Clients at the foot clinic will now have to travel to Strait Richmond Hospital. For residents on the eastern end of Richmond County, this will mean a half-hour to one-hour drive. Unfortunately, Mr. Speaker, it gets worse. Due to cuts by the NDP government, the health authority is now going to charge $15 per visit to the foot clinic, which was previously a service provided for free. And my question is, will the Minister of Health explain how this is better health care sooner for the residents of Richmond County?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this is the first that I've heard about this specific service and what's happening with this service. If the Honourable Member would like to provide me with the details, I'll certainly look into it. Thank you,
Mr.
Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Many seniors who access the foot clinic are diabetics. They rely on the service and question if they will be able to travel to the Strait Richmond Hospital and pay the $15 per visit. Unfortunately, it gets worse because the District Health Authority has also announced that due to cuts made by the NDP government, they will now charge for parking at the Strait Richmond Hospital. So for seniors who access the foot clinic, now they have to pay $15 for service that was free, and now they'll have to pay parking, which was previously provided for free. So my question is, will the Minister of Health intervene in this matter and return the foot clinic to the Dr. Kingston Medical Clinic?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. There are two things I'd like to address in the Honourable Member's question, if I could, Mr. Speaker. First of all is the question of parking at the Strait Richmond Hospital. And, Mr. Speaker, with this situation at New Page, I spoke with the Deputy Minister because I had heard that Gasha were looking at putting parking in the Strait Richmond, and I asked that, in fact, that parking be deferred until we assist the Strait through this difficult time. So to the best of my knowledge, parking fees are not imminent at the Strait Richmond Hospital. The second point I would like to make is that, and the Honourable Member would know this, there is a proposal on my desk from the Kingston Clinic, which I have indicated in the past that I view very favourably. And I do not know the circumstances under which that clinic was moved. I know that the representations I've had from the community have been around the adequacy of space, et cetera, in the existing clinic. And as I indicated, I will take the information under advisement and look into this matter. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Well, thank you, Speaker, and it's the first that I hear that the Minister had raised some issues with parking at the Strait Richmond Hospital, and hopefully she can provide a bit more guidance on that, because I know that the media reports that did come out with the delay indicated that it was an issue with the tenders that had been called for the actual parking machines at the hospital. So if that is not the case, and certainly I'd look forward to hearing exactly how long the Minister is asking for an extension of that. The Foot Clinic was a service provided for free at the Kingston Clinic that access was accessed by a lot of diabetics. The District Health Authority basically said to cut costs due to reductions in her budget, they would have to move it to the Strait and charge a fee. So I'm hopeful that the Minister will look into this and will work with the District Health Authority with the hopes of returning that service. So my final question is that will the Minister take the time to review this whole situation and working with the Health Authority to hopefully return that free foot clinic back to the Kingston Clinic?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as I indicated, I will take the information and look into it. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, my question is also for the Minister of Health and Wellness. In March 2010, the government announced a development of a mental health strategy. 3 months later, they announced co-chairs for the advisory committee. And 3 months after that, Mr. Speaker, they announced the committee itself. The mandate of the committee is to produce a mental health strategy by the summer of 2011. My question to the minister is, given that it is now almost the end of December or almost Christmas, can the minister confirm whether she has received the mental health strategy? And if so, when will the results be shared with Nova Scotians?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the member for raising a very important matter. As members know, a mental health strategy is one of my personal priorities, and certainly it is a priority for this government. I have yet to receive the mental health strategy from the working group, and Mr. Chair, I look forward to that work being completed and having an opportunity to review it and then respond in a public way. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it's now been close to 2 years since the announcement of the creation of the strategy. The challenges and pressures that are faced with the mental health system and the need to address them have not changed. What has changed, though, Mr. Speaker, is government's announcement that there will be a cut to district health authorities of 3% next year, a reduction that could be close to $90 million coming out of the budgets of frontline health care, including mental health services, and that will present considerable pressures. My question to the minister is, can the minister please indicate whether cuts to the DHA budgets will slow down progress when it comes to implementing the pending recommendations from the mental health strategy?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in giving the DHAs and the IWK their budget target of a 3% reduction for next year, we set out some parameters. And one of the parameters was that existing services in terms of mental health and addiction services were to be protected from the 3% target, Mr. Speaker. And so our budgetary planning should have no impact on existing services, and as I said, I have yet to receive the final document in terms of a mental health strategy to do planning from on a go-forward basis.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, even if the budgets are frozen, that's going to be a cut to services and mental health. At a very minimum, there's going to be increases to wages and inflationary pressures on those services. Mr. Speaker, we're still waiting on the strategy. I guess the minister is too, but it's only going to be a lot of nice-sounding words unless there's a plan for implementation of the recommendations. I'd like to know if the minister can confirm whether the advisory committee that was struck to produce the strategy will remain in place to ensure that their recommendations are actually implemented.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I again thank the member for the question. We've had a very able working group. They have dedicated many, many hours of volunteer time to developing the strategy, and I want to take this opportunity to thank them for their hard work on behalf of myself and the government, and I'm sure all members, and I very much look forward to the final product. I'm sure it will be an excellent blueprint or a roadmap to help us improve mental health services in the province. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Just earlier, Minister of Community Services just joined CUPE in the foyer of the House of Assembly for a press conference where the CUPE president is calling on the government to stop funding private health care. So my question to the minister is, this now government policy to phase out private daycare funding?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to thank the Honourable Member for his question because it gives me the opportunity to tell you that we joined CUPE because we are supporting what they have presented in terms of a very informative report, the Fairholme report, that actually shows the economic benefits that a province has when they invest in the early years and we invest in our daycares. And that's important to us as a government to recognize that that investment is going to make a huge difference in our future. And that is the reason that we were there to say congratulations on the work that you've done with this report. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. As a father of two young children, I recognize the need for all working parents to have access to high quality, affordable, accessible, trustworthy daycare. But we find this is an attack on small business that works. They work very hard to provide the service in rural and urban areas is not the answer. We've seen this government attack many small business sectors, including road pavers, pharmacists, non-unionized employers, insurance brokers, and here we go again. On the minister's own website, there's also a list of all daycares in the province, and I'll table that 16-page of contact information for daycares across the province. So my question through you to the Minister of Community Services, which daycares on the list has the minister consulted prior to participating in this type of an announcement that will send shockwaves through our small business community?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, the only shockwaves that get delivered is from that other side there that continually fear mongers every time they have an opportunity to take an issue and twist it around. What we have done, I was very clear at the press conference, Mr. Speaker, that we're in our early days of developing a framework and bringing together in the first steps our different departments. That's one thing the Progressive Conservatives did not know how to do. They only worked in their silos. The second step that we're looking at is the fact that this is not an attack on small business because we truly appreciate the number of daycares that we have that are for profit. They know that. I've had discussions with them and to indicate that we approve of them and we appreciate the work. There's about 50% of them in the province. But this is looking at the future very much the same as Prince Edward Island has done in terms of how can we grandfather those businesses in so it's supporting them. How can we consult with them? That is something that they don't understand is strategy and consultation and vision looking towards the future.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. CUPE was very, very clear in their press conference today, and that was to phase out private daycare funding. In Nova Scotia, there are a number of child care options available. As we've heard the announcement, about 50% are private. Private daycares play an important role in communities, and according to her own website, you can have your child care for a licensed child care facility staffed by early childhood educators or in someone's home by a child care provider or by someone who cares for a small number of children in their home, in your home or theirs. Each has its advantages. And I'll table that document from the website. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister, would the minister please explain for this House what future does private daycare play in an NDP government?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said at the press conference, I was very clear, and I will clarify it again. Number one, we are not phasing out the for-profit daycares that exist today. We will consult with them, and we will also work with them in terms of grandfathering clause in. What we're doing is what they never, ever understood, is to take a situation and look and analyze it, you know, instead of making decisions that are based on political benefits for them. We look at what is beneficial for the people of Nova Scotia, for the children of Nova Scotia. They're always crying that we're not investing. This report shows, Mr. Speaker, that investing in the early years and using tax dollars wisely is an economic stimulus. They just clearly do not understand that, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Sir Speaker, the Grand Gully Road in River Bourgeois is a gravel road that's been subject to flooding on a repeated basis. The only means by which this can be addressed is for the roadbed to be raised, which is beyond the financial capabilities of the district office. Therefore, they need capital investment to be made. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like that's going to be done this year, but will the Minister of Transportation be willing to look at this matter and find the capital money to upgrade the Grand Gully Road to prevent continued flooding?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And to the member opposite, I thank you for the question. Merry Christmas. I appreciate the gift. More importantly, I'm aware of the fact of the Grand Gully Road. I'm aware of the fact of the priority it is for you. And perhaps the next time I visit your fabulous isle, I'll take an opportunity to take a tour as we did before. And I want to, at that point, point out to you that you were driving that day, and that poor lady named Samson, she has the same problem you do. You drive too fast.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his first supplementary.
Well, you were in too much of a rush. That's why I had to go a bit faster. The Clearwater Road is another important road in Cape Ogot, where the Clearwater facility is. Will the minister be looking at that road as well?
The Honourable... The time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has ended. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Mr. Speaker, would you please, I wish you to now leave the chair and the House resolves up the whole House on bills.
The motion is for... Motion carried. We will now take a short pause while the Deputy Speaker gets ready for Committee of the Whole House.